The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Biden sends a troubling message to Russia.
Putin heard loud and clear, come on in, we're not going to do anything.
The United States seeks belatedly to help Ukraine.
Well, and what we're giving them is not enough, and it's not quickly enough.
An anti-mandate protest hits the street of our nation's capital.
There's accounts of anywhere from 40,000 to 50,000 people who participated in the march, and it was peaceful, and it was a fantastic event.
A reporter responds to Joe Biden's vulgar comment.
Yeah, nobody has fact-checked him yet.
And President Biden will nominate a Supreme Court justice. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And please follow me on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program as well at Town Hall Review. The threat of Russian invasion of Ukraine is so imminent that by the time you hear this, there could already be renewed bloodshed. As I record this, the Russian troops have not crossed into Ukraine, begun their slaughter. But they have amassed more force than they need to do just that on the border. And they seem far less threatened and deterred after this shocking statement from President Joe Biden.
Russia will be held accountable if it invades. And it depends on what it does. It's one thing if it's a minor incursion and then we end up having a fight about what to do and not do, et cetera.
Imagine living in a threatened free country and counting on the help of the United States and hearing that statement. The White House quickly backtracked, but the damage had been done. The message was sent. Putin and his protégés know what they heard. I spoke earlier this week with Iowa Congressman Mike Gallagher, a member of the Armed Services Committee in the House. What did we send to Ukraine? Did we send them land-to-sea missiles? Because I saw from a private chat room that they've got Russian ships going past Gibraltar towards the landing zones in Ukraine.
We sent them Javelin anti-tank missiles. We sent them other anti-armor systems, grenade launchers, munitions, non-lethal equipment essential to Ukraine's military. However, in their arsenal right now, they have something called the Neptune anti-ship missile, which is capable of striking targets at a distance of up to 300 kilometers. So that's more than adequate if you're striking targets in the Black Sea right now. So depending on how good they are at operating the system, how many missiles they have, cruise missiles they have in their arsenal, they should be able to at least hold Russian ships at threat at a distance, and therefore we wouldn't need to deploy our similar systems with a longer range like the Nemesis missile right now. So that being said, I'm sure there's expertise that we could offer them on that. I guess the bigger question when it comes to naval assets in the Black Sea is whether we need to deploy naval assets to the Black Sea. It gets very complicated right now. We have exercises going on in the Eastern Med. We have the USS Harry Truman. That's really not designed to affect anything on the ground in Ukraine so much as just kind of send a message to Russia in other parts of the region. Our good friend Jerry Hendricks has argued in the past that we have to be able to move, for example, littoral combat ships into the Black Sea. You could have a squadron of four LCS-1s. The LCS-2 is shallow enough in its draft to be able to enter the Sea of Azov. However, that would mean we'd violate something called the Montreux Convention. But given that Russia is already in violation of it, we shouldn't necessarily be too concerned about that. So right now, we don't have our own naval assets in the Black Sea. And I think that's something we need to look at right now. We need to look at everything we can do to bolster our deterrent capability vis-a-vis Russia and Ukraine, because the Biden administration is simply moving too slow. And the more it delays and the more it sends mixed signals, the less options we have in our arsenal right now. And the fact that we're sending the signal that we're going to evacuate another embassy, I think, is terrible. I mean, and it raises the question, how many embassies do we need to evacuate before the Biden administration realizes that its foreign policy isn't working, right? I mean, this is the same team that bungled the evacuation of the Afghanistan embassy is now going to get a chance to do it again in Ukraine. Well, it's absolutely embarrassing.
Congressman, you've got the PhD in history, and you have been in Congress on armed services for a number of years now. I understand that mobilizing 8,500 American troops, including the 82nd Airborne, is a domestic consumption thing, which is going to greatly be a burden on the military families who see their loved ones go off to Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. But it's got nothing to do with Ukraine. We are not going to commit troops there. The only thing that matters, and correct me if I'm wrong, is what the president says he will do, absolutely, if they invade, and what we give them right now. So all I care about is what are we giving them right now? Do you have visibility into that as a member of the House Armed Services Committee?
Well, and what we're giving them is not enough, and it's not quickly enough. You know, I'm glad that they're getting javelins. They really want ammo and intel right now. They want javelins, they want stingers, and they want intel that they can provide, they can use for actionable targets, which means that we will need to enhance our cooperation on the ground. But you're absolutely right. The 8,500 troops that the Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby talked about, well, one, they haven't actually been sent anywhere, and two, they're not going to be on the ground in Ukraine. So I sort of read that as the Biden administration's tacit admission that they're not interested in fighting Russia over Ukraine. At best, they're just going to do whatever is necessary to save face by bolstering the surrounding countries. And we find ourselves in a position where the Biden administration has been unable to persuade key NATO allies, foremost among them Germany, to go along with a united response. And if you remember, part of the Biden administration or Biden's argument on the campaign trail against then President Donald Trump was effectively that he was too mean to the Europeans and that Biden was going to restore unity among our NATO allies and our European allies. Well, precisely the opposite has happened. Biden has further fractured NATO, and you have some states like the UK being very forward-leaning, very aggressive, and dismayed that the U.S. has been caught flat-footed yet again. You have other countries like Estonia who want to provide more weapons to Ukraine but are being blocked by countries like Germany.
Senator Joni Ernst slammed what she called Biden's doctrine of appeasement in an op-ed at Fox News. Senator Ernst joined me on The Hugh Hewitt Show. I am alarmed by what is going on. Reports of Russian troop ships passing Gibraltar, of Russian pontoon brigades moving through Belarus. It looks like the full Monty from Putin capitalizing on President Biden's appeasement. What do you think?
Yes, Hugh, I agree. I'm, you know, very distraught over what we see going on in Eastern Europe with Ukraine and really the very aggressive nature of Russia. And it is due to this administration's doctrine of appeasement. We cannot keep doing this. Congress has been sounding the alarm bells for months now, and yet the administration has simply disregarded.
Senator Wickard was on yesterday, Wicker, and he wants to have the defense appropriations bill move as soon as Congress returns next week. Do you think that will happen, Senator?
Well, I do think that there is an emphasis on this now. There are many of us, this is a bipartisan issue, so many of us that believe we need to be moving as quickly as possible. I mean, again, Congress has been sounding the alarm bells. And last fall, we had $450 million of lethal aid ready for Ukraine and sanctions on Nord Stream 2. All of that has been prepared, ready to go. But again, this this administration has just been very slow to react. And again, going back to the appeasement of our adversaries, we see this not just with Russia, but we've seen it with Iran, China, you name it. So this has got to stop. There are some serious actions going on now by Russia, and they will lead to serious consequences.
Now, Senator Ernst, you mentioned lethal aid. That really, the three things that matter the most are land-to-sea missiles, harpoons, stingers, which can bring down aircraft, and then anti-tank missiles. To your knowledge, have we given them everything they can use? I don't want to oversupply them because it's going to be like Afghanistan. They'll end up in the Russian army. But have we given everything Ukraine can possibly use?
Well, we have allocated for what we want to give to Ukraine. I know that that is being distributed. I can't say that everything is in Ukraine at this time. But to your point, Hugh, yes, we don't want to oversaturate, but it does need to be at the ready. So we will work with the Ukrainian military. We'll make sure that they are appropriately trained on all of those weapon systems. They absolutely have to have a fighting chance should Russia invade.
Now, Senator, you're a soldier and you study this. You've been on armed services a long time. When President Biden made his off-the-cuff minor incursion may not lead to much remark, what do you think Vladimir Putin heard when he heard that?
He heard, hey, Russia, go ahead. We're not going to do anything. And I would remind people here in the United States, too, as if we saw a country come into Massachusetts, you know, armed, killing innocent civilians along the way. Massachusetts, that's pretty small. You know, maybe that would be a minor incursion, but it's not. It is an invasion. And Ukraine is a sovereign nation. They do have territorial lines that cannot be crossed by an invasive force. So what President Biden said was absolutely inexcusable. And it's really hard to walk that back once those words are out there. But Putin heard loud and clear, come on in, we're not going to do anything.
Minor incursion, does it apply to Taiwan? Does it apply to Lithuania, which is constantly threatened by Russia? When he said that, I think serious people all said, that's Dean Acheson 1950 level. That's April Gillespie sitting down with Saddam Hussein, you know, months before he invaded Kuwait and basically green-lighting him. It was insane.
Yes. And what we have heard with President Biden's careless words, of course, then a majority of our NATO countries are extremely disappointed in President Biden. So it's not just President Zelensky in Ukraine that is extremely upset about it. It's his country. But it's also NATO countries that are very disappointed in Biden's lack of ability to lead. We have a wonderful alliance in NATO. They are very concerned about Russia approaching their borders. You mentioned, of course, our Baltic states are very, very concerned about this. And we need an alliance in a unified response against Russian aggression. And yet President Biden isn't able to pull it together enough to push back strongly against Russia.
Last question on this subject, Senator Ernst. It seems to me like Germany has left NATO, de facto left NATO. What do you think they're doing?
Well, Germany is concerned first and foremost only with itself and its own people. And, you know, we have allowed that to happen. We did not put sanctions on Nord Stream 2 when we should have. We did not slow that process down.
Coming up, Fox News reporter Peter Ducey responds to being called a vulgarity by President Biden.
Yeah, nobody has fact-checked him yet.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Justice Stephen Breyer is retiring from the United States Supreme Court at the end of this term. Justice Breyer is a very reliable, very liberal member of the court. He has served with dignity and good humor since being nominated almost 3 decades ago by President Bill Clinton. Justice Breyer's last term will be marked by his being on the dissenting side in decisions involving the protection of unborn life. Breyer has been a vocal, very extraordinary proponent for unlimited abortion on demand laws across the years and cases on religious liberty, property rights, and the right to bear arms. Indeed, Breyer's last week as an active justice in June or July will likely be surrounded by his final drafts of dissents. That is because the Senate GOP leader McConnell held open the vacancy on the court when Justice Scalia died, and then President Trump nominated 3 originalists, Justices Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Coney Barrett, and the court is a 6-3 originalist court. Justice Breyer will no doubt be succeeded by another liberal, and the court's balance will remain exactly as it is. Expect President Biden's nominee to have a smooth and rapid confirmation. The Republican senators do not try and destroy nominees. Thank God, and thanks to Justice Breyer for service with integrity and a smile. Omicron is spreading at a record pace. We know this. It isn't nearly as deadly as the earlier variants of COVID, but it is far more contagious. Cities and states across America continue to react in different ways. In some states, such as Florida and now Virginia, mandates are vanishing. In deep red states, you can enter restaurants and schools without a mask. Indeed, it's rare to see one. Unemployment is low. There is little fear in those regions. But in some deep blue states and cities, governors and mayors are doubling down. Masks and even vaccines are required to enter a restaurant. Last weekend in Washington, D.C., thousands of people gathered to protest the mandate. Will Witt, one of the organizers, discussed the event on the Dennis Prager Show.
Who organized this?
You know, it was really a grassroots type of deal with a lot of different organizations. You know, there was Children's Health Defense, there was the Unity Project, lots of different organizations coming together to make this happen. But it was really just lots of just normal people coming together to do their best to put it on.
And what was the message?
Well, the message was against these mandates, these draconian measures that we're seeing all across the country, specifically in many of the leftist cities, D.C., Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, San Francisco, these type of measures that aren't backed up by science. And even when you look at what many doctors are saying, isn't backed up by them either. So it's all about power and control. So we were there marching against those types of mandates.
Who was the keynote speaker, Dr. Malone?
Yeah, I would say Dr. Robert Malone was the keynote, along with Dr. Peter McCullough, and then Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was there as well.
So how many people you think were there?
Well, I was just listening to The View on my way, just about to do this interview with you, and they were saying there was about a couple thousand people, when in reality what they're saying is a complete lie. I was there. There's accounts of anywhere from 40,000 to 50,000 people who participated in the march, and it was peaceful, and it was a fantastic event.
Probably 95% of those people had their children vaccinated. Not on COVID.
90% of the speakers were vaccinated against COVID, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How would you describe the typical person, if that's even a fair question, who attended the march?
The typical person there was someone who wanted to get back to the America that they grew up in. They see an America now that has taken away their freedoms, that has taken away their individual, their value of choice, and they no longer have that. And all they want to do is be able to live their lives in peace without these draconian measures. They want to be able to get away from these mandates, get away from these edicts, and be able to just live their life free from the government's control. It is just normal people who have said, I've had enough of this. These aren't extremists or anti-vaccine.
So in a sense,
like it's just normal people.
Exactly. That's a really good description, Will. So in effect, these people want their states to be Florida.
That is exactly correct. They want it to be Florida, Texas, Idaho. It's you know, this event that we just did was for anyone of any political purpose. I was really the biggest conservative name there to come and speak. You know, it wasn't really like that. There was a person from Black Lives Matter coming and speaking. But it is worth noting that most of the draconian measures, these mandates, are happening in left-wing cities.
That's exactly right.
As the week began, President Joe Biden held a White House event addressing the rising concerns around the inflation that is spiking. It did not go well. As it closed, this happened.
It's a great asset. More inflation. What a stupid son of a...
Biden was addressing Peter Doocy, a reporter for Fox News. Here's Salem host Mike Gallagher.
Here's the exchange between Jesse Waters and Peter Doocy on Fox News.
There was a group of reporters that were all gathered. We listened to him explain the Competition Council, which is the reason that he's having this meeting with most of the cabinet. And somebody shouted out a question about Russia. And the president said, I'm not going to take questions right now about anything off topic. So I shouted out something that's not on my 2 pages of questions about crime. Okay, what about inflation? Do you think inflation is a political liability? In the midterms. And then he said that. And I couldn't even hear him because people were shouting at us to get out. But somebody came up to me in the briefing room a few minutes later and said, did you hear what the president said? And I said, no, what? They said, he called you a stupid SOB. And I said, did he say SOB? And the person said, no.
He did the elongated version.
You know. Fun time.
Yep. So, Ducey, I think the president's right. You are a stupid SOB.
Yeah, nobody has fact-checked him yet and said it's not true.
No one's given Pinocchio's for that one.
I mean, it's true. It's just laughing off. And then Biden called Ducey. You know he wanted to apologize, but they wouldn't let him. And I don't know if he wanted to apologize or not. I think he's really a bitter, kind of angry old man. And, you know, the older he gets, the angrier he gets. And let's face it. I mean, we're all going to hope to get there someday, but he's old. He's an old man. And he doesn't like the way things are going. He thought this would be a cakewalk. I mean, now he's got, you know, Ukraine blowing up. He's got crime. He's got illegal immigration. COVID, 2,000 deaths a day still in America. Hate to break it to you, but he doesn't have COVID under control. They're praying it goes away. That's their only chance in the midterms, and I don't know that it'll be enough. He disparaged, I think it was Jackie Heinrich last week from Fox News. They're only going after Fox reporters. Well, now they're going to have to start going after NBC and Chuck Todd, I guess, since Chuck Todd, oh, by the way, who was also famously called an SOB by President Trump, Chuck Todd looked into the camera Sunday morning and said America essentially despises the Biden administration. He looked into the camera and said Americans don't think the guy's competent. Americans don't think the guy is a good commander-in-chief. What was it, 5% of people think that Biden's doing a better job than expected? 5%? So even Chuck Todd, that SOB, looks, I'm kidding, I'm just quoting Trump. Even Chuck Todd is turning on the Democrats and this administration. You know, I think consistency is important. And if you never criticized Trump for his sharp-elbowed approach to everything, the bull in the china shop approach, and I'll admit, I didn't. He had enough criticism. He was dealing with literal jackals every day, morning, noon, and night. But if we didn't criticize Trump for the language he used, I think it looks silly for us to criticize Biden for his outburst with Peter Ducey.
Coming up, a pastor in Finland goes on trial.
The biblical theology on marriage and sex as being between a man and a woman is considered a hate crime.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Hi, friends. This is Katie Pavlich from townhall.com. The liberal media and big tech are working overtime to promote the left's anti-American agenda and silence me and the reporters on our team at Town Hall. We have to bring the truth to the American people, free from the spin of big media and the censorship of those big tech companies. We're constantly covering the news that matters, exposing the COVID lies, the leftist rot and crime surge in our cities, the illegal alien crisis at our southern border, and all of Joe Biden's unconstitutional overreach, including the critical race theory attacks on our children and grandchildren by school boards and the Department of Justice. I hope you'll support our vital team of conservative journalists today. You can do so by going to townhallaction.com. While cancel culture and big tech comes for us, the direct support of our VIP members helps make us uncancelable. Please join our team by becoming a VIP member at townhallaction.com. That's townhallaction.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's not the first time that this has happened, but the trend is increasing. Pastors are arrested and tried for simply reading from Scripture. Not in the United States, not yet. But few doubt that we are moving in this direction, though not radically so. As it is, businesses are firing people for their biblical beliefs. It is the very reason many seek to strengthen laws protecting religious liberty. Dennis Prager discussed the Finland case with Joy Pullman, executive editor at The Federalist.
Tell us what's happening in Finland.
There was a trial of two Christian leaders in Finland
where they were essentially, I mean, very directly put on trial for their faith. They were asked in great detail theological questions in a secular state court. And at the reason that they were hauled into court is they're accused of violating the country's hate crimes laws. And so this has apparently really very directly made the Bible a issue of possible criminal complaint. In Finland, one of the people who was accused to standing trial today, Päivi Räsänen, is a member of parliament, former appointed minister of the interior, a medical doctor, the wife of a pastor, so very prominent citizen in Finland, and she's been a member of the political opposition for many years. And so, you know, human rights organizations around the world are calling this, you know, very patently kind of frightening persecution based on her religious beliefs, as well as, of course, you know, implicating all of these free speech rights that, you know, that are supposed to be assured in Western countries, but are often being really degraded now when we're creating special rights for citizens based on their sexual behavior. So standing trial alongside her is a bishop of the independent Lutheran Church in Finland. It's basically the largest, I don't know about the largest, but it's a non-state Lutheran church, which is unusual because there's an established church there still in Finland. So Finland officially has Christianity as its established government, you know, government-approved religion. It is the state religion in Finland, but it is in its courts prosecuting the profession of Christianity as a hate crime.
What specifically have they said or written for which they are being tried?
There are three counts against Räsänen, and there's one against Bishop Pohjola. And basically his connection to this is in 2004, he asked Mrs. Räsänen to write a booklet talking about Christian theology about sex and marriage. So in that booklet, which I can't read Finnish, so I haven't been able to read it myself, but I've talked with the bishop in person when he was in the U.S. Last fall. And, you know, and actually he and I, our churches are what we call in confession, so we believe many of the same things. So it's standard Christian teaching going back centuries about how men and women are different. We're physically different, and those physical differences have theological meaning, and that marriage is meant to be between only men and women for their entire lives. You know, so very classic understanding of marriage, the Orthodox Christian understanding. Nothing unusual here. And even if it was unusual, it really, frankly, isn't. The government's business to, you know, determine what people are allowed to believe or say.
What exactly is the hate that marriage should be between a man and a woman?
So the bishop published this, you know, this booklet that said Christian theology. That's the hate, Christian theology, that marriages between man and a woman and that men and women are different. So the hate crimes law in Finland is similar to what we've seen in the United States that are called sometimes sexual orientation and gender identity laws. So frankly, the biblical theology on marriage and sex as being between a man and a woman is considered a hate crime under the prosecutor's interpretation of Finnish law. So the crime, you know, that the bishop and Ms. Räsänen said was first publishing a booklet stating that their beliefs, their, you know, basic Christian beliefs. And then Mrs. Räsänen has two other counts that are basically the same thing. One of them was she tweeted a picture of Bible verses in Romans that are also about this issue as a criticism against the state church for sponsoring a gay pride parade. And the third count against her was she was part of a public debate in 2019 on the same issue. So these are all basically, you know, they're being prosecuted for believing what the Bible says about men and women being different and what marriage means.
Do they expect to be convicted?
You know, they really weren't sure. When I talked to the bishop in November, he said, you know, they think the most likely outcome is a fine. But they really don't know.
That's convicted.
The charge could include up to 2 years in prison. This is actually really unprecedented water, legally speaking. And as I, you know, so I've talked to some of the bishop and Mrs. Räsänen's legal counsel. Basically, these sorts of laws are relatively new. I mean, the law that they're being tried under didn't exist when the bishop and Mrs. Räsänen wrote and published the booklet that they're being now brought up on trial for. There's so many things wrong with it. This retroactive punishment.
Go to townhallreview.com for the rest of that conversation. Coming up, Governor Glenn Youngkin does what he promised.
We're going to continue to go fight for parents and their kids.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Whatever happened to happiness? By every measure, we're less happy now than at any time in our history. The problem is we've confused happiness with comfort. There's a better way to live. The reactionary way. Read about it in Michael Warren Davis's new book, The Reactionary Mind, Why Conservative Isn't Enough. In a world of fake news where politics has become religion, this book shows us how to be reactionaries. Order Michael Warren Davis's new book, The Reactionary Mind, Why Conservative Isn't Enough, from Amazon and wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. When Glenn Youngkin ran for governor in Virginia, odds were greatly against him. But as in much of the country, parents are fed up with the government working to control their lives and especially the learning of their children. Freedom has had a way of overturning bad government for decades, centuries, indeed millennia. America has a history of making course corrections at the state and the federal level. Glenn Youngkin ran a very disciplined campaign. He made many promises to the people of Virginia, and he came through right from the beginning. Governor Youngkin, the new Governor Youngkin, joined me on The Hugh Hewitt Show. The mask executive order, which does not mandate children not mask, but gives the parents the right to have their children masked or not, has been met with some resistance. And you have put out a tweet, which I want to read to people. While the legal process continues on the parental opt-out of mask mandates for their children in schools, I urge everyone to love your neighbor, to listen to school principals, and to trust the legal process. I am a Proverbs 15:1 guy, Governor. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. I thus applause for your tweet, but what do you think about what some of these school districts are doing?
Well, I think it is absolutely consistent with their behavior over the last number of years where they've ignored parents' rights. And, of course, I want to say thank you to the school systems that are recognizing parents' rights. And in Virginia, in our code, law is a very clear statement that parents have a fundamental right to make decisions with regards to their children's upbringing, education, and care. It is part of Virginia's code. And therefore, these school districts that have been ignoring Virginia's rights are absolutely in contravention with the Virginia code. This is why our executive order has such great grounding. And this is why those school systems that are recognizing the rights of parents today, I say thank you. And there's a legal process that's going to work its way through that will clarify this in all respects. And at the end of the day, I ask everybody to love your neighbor. And parents, teachers, administrators, everybody, let's just recognize that this is a moment for us to do what's right for the kids. And what's right for the kids is to let their parents make decisions for them.
Now, Governor, I have in front of me the Loudoun County Public Schools announcement over the weekend by Scott Ziegler, in which it is clear that they are using punitive measures against students who unmask by arbitrarily increasing the quarantine for those students who come down with COVID who do not mask to 10 days, which is not CDC guidance nor Virginia Department of Education guidance. It's punitive. And I do not believe they're alone. I think maybe Virginia Beach did this as well, but I know Loudoun County did it. What do you make of school districts that are acting in a punitive way, pretending to comply with your executive order, but increasing the significant cost for children who do not wear masks?
Yeah, we're going to continue to go fight for parents and their kids. And so this is one of the reasons why I called for Attorney General Meares to investigate the Loudoun County School Board. I think the decisions that they have made, where they, in fact, decided to not tell parents about a sexual assault, to actually, in a very, very opaque way, move a child around school systems, are reflective of the fact that they do not respect parents. And they, in fact, want to try to use their position in a punitive way when people don't agree with them. And that is so wrong. And so we're going to go fight for parents. We're going to make sure that children have the ability to be in school, to be in school when they're complying with the law, which is what our executive order upholds. And we're going to continue to fight for parents.
Now, Governor, I had an exchange over the weekend with Jim Sciutto, a very smart guy who anchors on CNN. Very smart guy, friend of mine. And he is reflective of the Beltway mindset of risk aversion, very anti the England-Texas model, which you have adopted, parental choice. You've lived in the Beltway much longer than I have. I was there in the 80s and I'm back now. Do you think that the Beltway has any idea what parents actually think outside of the deep blue suburbs of Virginia and Maryland?
Well, I believe that the Beltway mindset that you describe, which, by the way, isn't everybody in Northern Virginia, as we saw in this most recent election, where
Agreed.
we had record support from Northern Virginia for our win. But it reflects the fact that Virginia had gone the wrong direction. I mean, we were one of 16 states around the nation to have a statewide mask requirement. And we're seeing states revisit this across the country, including New York is reevaluating their mask mandates in schools. I mean, this is an absolute reflection of the fact that parents have rights. They're standing up for those rights, and they need elected officials like me and our lieutenant governor and our attorney general and the majority in the House of Delegates that they elected to go to work to protect them. And this is what we're going to do. And I do believe that we, in fact, are going to prevail here. The legal process is going to take a little bit of time. We've asked it to be expedited, but we're going to be patient. And I believe firmly that we will prevail here.
And, Governor, when school districts resist by other means, I think you're going to win, too. It's pretty clear to me that the executive order will be upheld. But you're doing this the right way. Be patient. Don't yell at principals. Send your kids to school. But when Loudoun County says, but we will punish your kids with a higher quarantine, which has got absolutely no basis in fact. And I think there are lots of practices all over Virginia in school districts that have no basis in fact. Will you continue to monitor and correct when school districts punish parents who want to, once vindicated, follow the freedom that your executive order returns to them?
You bet. Absolutely. And we've established an email address particularly for parents to send us concerns. It's helpeducation@governor.virginia.gov. And again, it's helpeducation@governor.virginia.gov. And we're asking for parents or anybody else, teachers or anybody else around the school system who wants to communicate with us directly and raise issues to send it to us.
I hope people.
It's really important for parents to have a voice, and we're giving them one.
A couple other things. Have you received advice from other governors yet, like Doug Ducey at the NGA or the RGA and other, you know, Mike DeWine? I'm a big fan of Mike DeWine. I'm a big fan of Ron DeSantis. Any of these governors called you up and chatted with you?
Absolutely. It's been a great support network. And what we're seeing, of course, is states led by Republicans outperforming states led by Democrats. It's just that clear. And I have so enjoyed the support from governors all over Virginia, all over the country, excuse me. And it's a great group. And you know what? Being a first-time elected leader and having that kind of support network is invaluable.
Coming up.
While Quebec is in full confinement mode, Florida is cowboy land, where you barely know COVID's happening.
The final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt when we return.
Hi, I'm Don Crow. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, with an abortion case before the High Court, we'll look at the 49th annual March for Life.
I've rarely felt the sense of confidence among the marchers that we're in for some big changes.
And a look to the future if indeed we see Roe overturned.
There is still so much work to be done.
We'll look at the collision between women's sports and the transgender athlete.
There is exactly what we had predicted, exactly what any sane person saw coming. The modern sexual and moral revolution is just steamrolling through everything, and that includes basically the destruction of women's sport.
We have all this and more. Be sure to join us and visit our website at ChristianOutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. We touched on the mask and the vaccine mandates a couple of segments today. We finished with a fascinating related read. A reporter from Lockdown Quebec visits the free state of Florida. Here's Salem host Mike Gallagher reading from Josh Fried of the Montreal Gazette.
Listen to this. He says, I have a confession to make. I recently fled Quebec for a week, a refuge from our 2.0 curfew and confinement rules. A friend told me about a condo in Florida. My wife and I made a last-second decision to briefly escape and work remotely. But the second we landed in Florida, it felt like we'd arrived on another planet. While Quebec is in full confinement mode, Florida is cowboy land, where you barely know COVID's happening, despite much higher new case and hospitalization rates than Canada's. It's lunacy by Canadian standards, but an eye-opening experience. For starters, everyone's out and about, filling bars, restaurants, movies, gyms, sports arenas. Stores and supermarkets don't require masks. Some cashiers and customers wear them, but not all. Restaurants are fully open. Waiters can choose whether to wear masks. At least half don't. In ever-friendly America, some customers even shake hands with their waiters before leaving, as if to say, thanks, I'll have some germs for dessert. It's easy to spot Canadians at restaurants in Florida. We're the ones properly masked and nervously sitting on the terrace, even out in the rain. You can... He's writing this like, I'm not kidding you. All right, I'll continue. You can see the difference in the news media, too. In Quebec, COVID totally dominates the news because there's almost nothing else happening. In Florida, it's the reverse. I checked the prestigious Miami Herald recently. The first mention of COVID anywhere in the paper, 18 stories down, with the headline, amid Omicron surge, hospitals are stretched thin. What can Florida lawmakers do? Among the many stories played far higher up were Miami Marlins named managers for minor league affiliates. He says it's hard to make this stuff up. Meanwhile, back in Canada, the same day, the top six stories were about COVID. By any measure, he writes, Florida life seems surreal, as if everyone's wearing blinders and trying not to notice a disease that's killed more than 63,000 Floridians. That's about twice as many deaths as in all of Canada, in a state with two-thirds our country's population. It's health madness, he writes. But there's a psychological upside, since COVID doesn't dominate all life here. We Montrealers live in a tense, depressing, pandemic bubble. All COVID all the time. Do you know that in Canada, we still can't legally invite anyone to our home in Canada?
For the rest of that story from Mike Gallagher, go to townhallreview.com. Thank you for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com. And sign up, please, for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin and producer Charlie Richards, Ben Brigman, David Pouchon, Adam Ramsey, Michael Cook, Alex Perez, and, of course, Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.